fuck's been a difference whether we won or lost?
Nail up!
Kill him!
Yeah! Get us!
You know, we ain't hockey players. We've been clowns. We've been goons. We've been freaks in a fucking sideshow. We're nothing but a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it. Violence is killing this sport. It's dragging it through the mud. And if things keep up the way they are, hockey players will be nothing but actors, punks. When I want to play it straight, no more nail him, no more fuck with him. That's finished. I want to win that championship tonight, but I want to win it clean. Old-time hockey. Like when I got started, you know? Geez, Toe Blake, Dick Clapper, Eddie Shore, those guys were the greats.
Yeah, sure, old-time hockey.
Hey everyone, welcome to this bonus episode of No Cartridge Audio. This is the first one I've done in a while that's just me talking. I'm trying to do this a little bit without an outline because I feel like those old episodes got a bit reedy, a little bit like I was just kind of going with the flow. And those early episodes were really my first stab at this podcasting thing. I feel, you know, right or wrong, that I'm a little better at it now. But today I wanted to talk a little bit about, I had a couple of thoughts, maybe I'll do both, two kind of really interesting video game things that I've been doing recently. The first is I've been playing PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which, you know, everyone in the world has pretty much. I was remarking to my friend Ari Truskin on Twitter, and also the guy I just constantly play this game with, that it's probably the game that is most, robust as an early access game of all time, maybe the biggest early access success ever. It's, for those of you who haven't played it, it's a really simple thing to explain. Basically, you are dropped, you're in a plane full of 100 people, you're dropped on an island and with everyone else. You parachute out of this plane, and the goal is you have to be the last man standing. So, or woman, there are, you know, many genders you can choose in the game. It's pretty cool, you can customize your character. But the customizations don't do anything. Basically, it's a bit Rust-like in that you're kind of naked and alone. Despite the clothes you have on, you have to ransack these houses that have clearly been sort of abandoned for a long period of time or destroyed or whatever, picking up body armor, weapons, what have you. Everyone in the map is dropped in a different place. You can choose where to be dropped, pretty much. You can pick where you're going to parachute out. There's a metagame, a robust metagame. There are a lot of players. People, you know, pick certain spots in the map because they're better armed or less populated. You can play a waiting game where you kind of wait out everyone in the map. Or you can play a more aggressive game where you drop into a place like there's an abandoned military base on the map where there are a ton of weapons, but also a ton of people are going to drop. And the game doesn't really give you a lot of health. It's not a game like, I'm trying to think of a good version. Well, you can think of something like GoldenEye, where there's a game that gives you a chance to have your mistakes covered up a little bit, at least. In that you won't just die instantly when someone shoots you. It's not like, you know, if you're playing as Bond and you're not using golden guns that you can, you know, be shot by an AK and surprised so totally that you can't run away. In Battlegrounds, you can totally be surprised so totally that you can't run away, leading you to be stunned, kind of crawling around, which simply leads you into this moment where you die ingloriously. Added to this is the fact that whether or not it's a development thing or not, the gun play is not immediately natural. To me, this sort of suggests a benefit to the game where, in fact, you're allowed a sort of... Well, so Scott Benson mentioned this on one of our episodes where he was talking about the bass playing segments in Night in the Woods, where there's a way in which May's bass playing doesn't quite work, right? It's very difficult to use. People complained about the difficulty. And his argument was, yeah, like, that's intentional. We gave you no tutorial. We gave you no sort of sense of how to do this because May herself is not especially good at playing bass. And in a sense, Battlegrounds is like this. You play these hyper-athletic people, but they also, it's difficult to use the guns they're using. They have scopes and stuff. If you improve them, it's fine. You could be like a sniper, and that's probably the most efficient way to get kills in Battlegrounds. But you also, like, if you're just going up to someone with a pistol and they have a rifle, you're not going to sneak your way through by being better at the game. You're just going to die. So a lot of it is really just running around, totally afraid until you get a little beefed up, and then just being hyper cautious and hyper aware of any sort of sense of movement outside of your vision. You know, the language of, you know, contact, you know, due east, eyes on the target, that just comes kind of naturally. It's very, very much a sort of militaristic game, even though there's no sense of militarism in it. It's just kind of a paranoid fantasy of, well, it's like Battle Royale or any of those things. It's a paranoid fantasy of the future as we know it. The interesting thing about Battlegrounds also is that it keeps the game itself, the sort of metagame itself, keeps you moving inward on the map. So there's a blue circle, and you have to stay within the blue circle or this gas will kill you. So everyone keeps getting herded into one major circle. If you're lucky enough to fall within the circle, you're kind of in the catbird seat. You can wait inside a house and wait for people to run in through the gas and snipe them. But most of the time, that's never happened to me because it would be very unlikely. Most of the time, you're left running around trying to desperately get to this place while people wait in trees or buildings and snipe you. Ultimately, it's this game where you're given all the weapons, all the body armor, all the sort of violent things you could want in the world, and your main goal in the game is just to not run into anyone and get as close as you can to the target with as few confrontations as possible. Obviously, the confrontation system is important in the game, but for a game that where there are 100 people, you're thinking, wow, I'm going to have to kill, you know, like, you know, a bunch of people to be the last one standing. You can just watch them drop off. People get too enthusiastic. People run into people run off cliffs. People get into fist fights early on and die. People just go for the first gun they find and jump into a firefight. People play this game like a first person shooter and just die off quick. You can wait out up until maybe the last 20 in a duo match, as long as you hit some luck fairly well, just by avoiding confrontations. Which makes Battlegrounds this really interesting problem in terms of first-person shooters. And I think it's because, first-person, third-person. You can play it either way, and most people play third-person. But it has the feel of a first-person shooter. It's very much, it's a mod of, I think it's a mod of Days, the sort of post-apocalyptic style game. Was it Days or was it something else? King of the Hill, maybe? It was H1Z1. It's sort of a version of H1Z1. But all those games, right, where, like, it's third person, it's like Left 4 Dead. But it feels like a first person game. In any case, it gives you kind of an interesting version of this, because unlike a lot of other games, the point of Battlegrounds isn't ever to have a offensive superiority. Of course, offensive superiority is a great thing. Ari mentioned to me once that he got an 8x scope, so a scope that can zoom in 8 times, and he felt like he was the hand of God, right? Like, you can just perch up in a building and pick off people as you go. But the real skill in Battlegrounds is planning out aversion to conflict. You know, being ready for that last conflict. You're of course going to have to get into some conflict if you want to win the game. If there are only 2 people left on the map, there's only one way to settle that problem. But finding ways to hide, finding ways to understand the map terrain so that you won't be spotted or that you'll be going through places that are less occupied, finding ways to sort of like have good OPSEC. You know, there's all the doors on the map where you land. This is, again, the robust metagame, are closed when you land. If you open them and leave them open, someone knows you've been there. If you close them, someone's going to come up to that house thinking, oh, hey, it's a house no one's been in. And then boom, you got them. Laying traps, things like that. As a gamer that came up in sort of like, I don't know if I'd call myself a gamer, but as a person that came up in the NES age through SNES and all that, offensive games up until, say, well, you know, there are some exceptions, but even the first sort of like the top-down Metal Gears, there's a lot more offense than defense in those games. And up until something like GoldenEye, and then furthermore up until the institution of cover-based shooters, offense was really the name of the game. That's what you did. Battlegrounds is about defense. It's about staying put. It's about being careful. It's about sort of like huddling back and not jumping forward into conflict, making sure that you kind of survey the landscape, listening for bullets. You know, noted Twitter personality Virgil Texas has noted that Battlegrounds sort of feels like it makes him feel like he has sort of like PhD, PhD, good Lord. I'm going to keep that in because it's embarrassing. PTSD in the ways he feels while playing the game. And they do make you quite tense. You're running across this field and you're thinking like the bullet can come from anywhere. You're hiding in a house and you're not moving one inch. And it's the most gripping experience you could want. It truly is this sort of like defensive stalemate. And I find this, I don't have anything really to say more about this. And this is, of course, why I kept it to the bonus episode, because it's sort of more of a thought than a fully drawn conclusion. But I find it really interesting that there's this game that is so reliant on violence, right? 100 people enter, one person leaves, that also relies on your sense of fear and self-preservation to actually succeed. Now, maybe that's because I'm a bad Battlegrounds player. Maybe the best way to do it is to drop into a zone that has a ton of weapons and just go for broke, and you know, you'll lose 20 out of 21 times, you know, within the first 10. But that one time where you get all the good equipment and you can just kind of run roughshod over everyone else on the map, maybe that's the way to do it. But the nature of the game sort of suggests to me that it's a much more chess-based, caution-based routine, where you are just this totally vulnerable character in a world full of other totally vulnerable characters, and the actual point of the game is waiting to see who makes the first move. Almost less like, and here's, I guess this will be the conclusion, almost less like a massive first-person shooter, which is what it would seem to be, or third-person shooter, which is what it would seem to be, but a replication of, say, a tense gun battle on a gunfight in like a Western, you know, Old West town. The idea that, you know, you have to wait and, you know, pace and figure out what the next guy is going to do. And then once you do it, just hope you're fast enough, right? It's this kind of tension and I don't know, gut-wrenching, fear-based play that actually, I think, makes Battlegrounds so successful. So just a thought that I had, that it was something more of a defensive game than an offensive game, and I just find that really interesting. The other thing I wanted to talk about today was Sunless Sea, which I've talked about a ton of times in the show, but after putting in you know, over 100 hours, I figure I should talk about it again. People will remark that I play a lot of Sunless Sea, and it's totally true, I do play a lot of Sunless Sea. The reason I play a lot of Sunless Sea is not because I'm just ignoring the other games I'm playing, or, you know, disregarding my fighting game training for the Evo thing that the Indiegogo was set up for, but rather because it's just really nice to edit the podcast to. It's fairly straightforward. There's not a lot that can surprise you. I can listen to the podcast without focusing so hard on, you know, my own voice, which if anyone here has recorded their own voice, you will completely know, no matter how nice your voice sounds or not nice your voice sounds, it sounds terrible to you. But Sunless Sea gives me the opportunity to listen to my voice without totally listening to my voice. It lets me zone out. It lets me relax. The other thing it lets me do is it's a game that I don't have to write on now. I've written on it before. I've done podcasts on it before. There's really no more ground to cover unless I cover Submariner, which I certainly will, or Sunless Skies, which is coming out later. Which, of course, you know, since I liked this game so much, I absolutely will. However, the base game of Sunless Sea, no one really wants to read me talk about it anymore. I could write more on it, but I won't. What this does then is it makes Sunless Sea actually sort of like a standard pleasure. I don't have to level up on it. It's a single player game. It's a game that I don't ever have to compete in. It's a game that I can just live in and exist in and have fun in. And I never actually have to feel like I'm responsible for anything else except my own enjoyment. So it's really fun that way, and it relaxes me. The other interesting thing about Sunless Sea is the way that it, and I've talked about this on previous podcasts, so I won't belabor it, but the way that it de-incentivizes victory. You die a lot. I've lost 10 or 12 captains using the Unforgiving mode, and when you use the Unforgiving mode, you die, you know, whenever you die, you lose everything. You start from scratch, essentially. You can get a little bit back, but basically you start from scratch. And starting from scratch sucks. It's no fun. It's a really crummy feeling to start from scratch in that game. But it happens, and in happening, you start to learn to accept this idea of permadeath, where, yeah, okay, my captain died, I'll start again. My captain died, I'll start again. And it stops being something that really crushes you and starts being something that, like, okay, this is how the game works. I'll just keep moving along with the game. I'll have fun with the game. The other thing that I hadn't realized, because I played so long with this sort of sense of disconnection, I'd played the Shadowed Stranger path in Sunless Sea for years, the years that I've played it. And I finally tried playing one of the missions, one of sort of like the legacies that they give you, where you can kind of do something in the game that helps you win the game. And so I did Your Father's Bones, which is where you find your father's bones and bring them back home to London. It's a long, you know, obtuse quest existing in the world. It doesn't change the game too terribly much. It just gives you this overarching achievement. You know, you're collecting things around the world. You're visiting all these islands. You're sort of engaging in all these storylines. And then the things you collect, well, some of them are going to be useful for finding your father's bones. It's just this added victory condition. And so I actually continued with the victory condition. And I just won. I won Your Father's Bones, and it was a really interesting experience. Because, of course, the game isn't complete, necessarily. There's plenty of other things that I could do in the game. I could go back to many islands. I could have gone back to many islands before retiring. I could have done all sorts of things in the game. Continued many things, fought monsters or whatever, tried to actually complete every single thing on the map. But I didn't, because I had accomplished this goal, and I had driven all my way back to London, and plunked my father's bones down, and at that point, it just felt like the game was over. Now, I described this to a friend as, at underscore Ingwit on Twitter. I described it to him as ambivalent, which is to say, like, it wasn't quite the success that you feel when you, you know, accomplish something huge. It was this feeling of, like, yeah, I accomplished this, and it's over. But it's over like anything else in Sunless Sea is over, in that it just starts again. Really, the brilliance of Failbetter's game here is that it produces this sense of continuity where you never actually finish it. Nothing's ever over. Now, of course, you could spend much more time than I've spent and do every single, you know, variation on plot lines, etc., in the story. You could enter out of the unforgiving mode and play it to sort of like complete it, get every single storyline complete, right? But it strikes me that the actual sort of purpose of the game is to present this world where nothing actually ends. There's no sort of end to it. It always starts again, and in starting again presents you with a new set of challenges. Do you want to do a new quest? Do you want to just be a shadowed stranger? Do you want to just, you know, explore the world anew once again? And you get that option, and even after beating it, it's like, well, there are those three legacies, and there are all those things I didn't do on those islands, and there's all this other stuff I can do, which keeps this very minimal. The graphics in it are nice. It's a pretty game, but it's not graphically intense or sort of like super interesting or anything like that. It's fairly straightforward, fairly simple, but it keeps it engaging for like 100 hours. Now, not for everyone, but for me, and the joy or the sort of brilliance of that is that it keeps the circularity up. Even once you catch the victory condition, you start over again. This captain's done. Here's a new captain, is what the game says to you. I just find that very interesting, and I find it very, very useful. So, you know, it's a Patreon episode, so I can't imagine they'll hear it, but thanks, Failbetter Games, for producing such a unique piece of gaming. It's, you know, it's become a bit of a relaxation from the grind. Let's say that. In any case, thanks everyone for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this individual podcast. Sometimes I don't get to do Q&As with people, and I thought instead of forcing it every time, if people don't have time or don't have the ability, I'll just start doing solo casts here and there. Certainly, I enjoy doing them. I miss doing them, and I want to have an opportunity to do them with you. I owe patron Deus Ex Juice a shout out. My good friend Steven at Deus Ex Juice on Twitter, but I'll give him the shout out here for now. But he and all the rest of you who've donated enough to actually have a shout out, I think on the next interview episode I'll include a bumper at the beginning or at end where I shout you guys out, give you sort of some credit for being such wonderful patrons. But in the meantime, thanks so much for being part of the Patreon. It's a really big deal. It helps me keep doing this. And I'm hoping I can keep growing this so that I can, you know, someday actually focus as much time on this project as I think it deserves. So thanks for listening, and I hope you all are doing well.